Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington, working on this program very much. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Friday, April 29, 2022. The Darfur Bar Association says 21 children were killed in West Darfur State.
They burned down houses, looted property, killed people and burned assets that they were not able to carry with them. All these things happened in front of the organized forces who are supposed to protect the people.
And South Sudan peace partners blame each other for delaying the graduation of the country's unified forces.
This man Ali, when they say that within 1 to 2 weeks, there will be completion of the unified command, then after that we'll go for graduation. As we all know, there has been so much challenges in this implementation, beginning with the lack of resources.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. President Salva Kiir is in the Kenyan capital Nairobi to attend a state funeral for the country's third president, Mwai Kibaki, who died last week at the age of 90. Officials are hailing Kibaki for transforming Kenya's economy and education. Muhammad Yusuf reports for VOA from Nairobi.
Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta led other African leaders and tens of thousands of Kenyans in paying last respects to former President Mwai Kibaki.
We are here not only to mourn an incalculable loss, but also to celebrate a magnificent life. We celebrate a man of faith, a man of family, a man of honor, and a man who always put Kenya and Kenyans first.
Kibaki died last week at the age of 90. He led the East African nation between 2002 and 2013, when he stepped down after two terms. South African President Cyril Ramaphosa is one of the leaders who attended the prayer service at Nyayo Stadium in Nairobi.
We remember President Kibaki for the leadership that he demonstrated, not only to Kenya, but also to the African continent. We remember him for his commitment to the people of Kenya and indeed to all of us as Africans.
60-year-old Jacinta Njeri is one of thousands who were on hand to remember the late president. She says there is no leader like him. We remember him for many things, she says. He will sponsor our children's education. He also developed our country. There is no better economist in Kenya than the president. Kenya's third president is praised for transforming the country's infrastructure, agriculture and education sector. The third Kenyan president, Kibaki's election in 2002, brought an end to 4 decades of one-party rule. Political commentator Michael Agwanda told VOA Kibaki transformed the country.
Literally, his work, the life of Kenyan governance since independence in 1963. Now, that is somebody that the country was expecting to come in with a lot of reforms in governance, in economics. And as a result, he did not disappoint people in his first term as the president. He stamped out corruption. It was not as much. He borrowed very little from the foreign and the local borrowers. He used the money and people started seeing the value for money.
The East African nation recorded its highest economic growth at 7% per year during his tenure in office. Many Kenyans also remember Kibaki for his role in 2007 and 2008 political violence. His disputed election win against opposition leader Raila Odinga, who accused him of rigging the vote, led to street protests and intercommunal clashes that claimed the lives of more than 1,100 people. At the funeral, Odinga spoke about meeting with Kibaki after the violence and how the two agreed to work together. The truce led to the formation of a unity government, with Odinga becoming prime minister. Kibaki will be buried on Saturday at his rural home in central Kenya. Mohamed Yusuf for VA News, Nairobi.
The The Darfur Bar Association says 22 children were among the hundreds of people killed during recent intercommunal clashes in West Darfur State. UNICEF's Middle East Regional Office in Amman says the killing of children is, quote, unjustified. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Khartoum.
UNICEF Regional Director for the Middle East and North Africa, Adel Khudr, said in a statement released yesterday, the killing of children is a grave violation of their rights. Nothing justifies killing children. Khudr renewed the UNICEF appeal for peace and called on authorities in Sudan to protect children in Darfur and across Sudan from harm and violence at all times. The Darfur Bar Association said 22 children were killed and 3 others injured during the violence in Krenik. Speaking to South Sudan in Focus via phone from Al Janina town, the capital of West Darfur state, lawyer Sadiq Tajuddin confirms an 11-month-old baby was among the children killed. Tajuddin, who helped put together the preliminary report about the deadly violence in Krenik, described the incident as a massacre carried out by armed men in military and civilian uniforms.
They burned down houses, looted property, killed people and burned assets that they were not able to carry with them. All these things happened in front of the organized forces who are supposed to protect the people. So if they failed to protect citizens and retreated, that means they have participated in the crime.
Tajuddin says 39 women and 108 men were killed during the fighting. He emphasized it is a preliminary report and the death toll could rise. On Wednesday, the Central Committee for Sudanese Doctors said 177 people were killed and 220 others wounded during the clashes. In an updated statement released Thursday evening, the committee said 19 other bodies were discovered around the Krenik area, bringing the death toll to 196. Tajuddin says the decision to end the United Nations and African Union peacekeeping mission in Darfur, or UNAMID, was wrong. The UN-African Union hybrid operation completed its withdrawal of all uniformed and civilian personnel by its deadline of June 30, 2021. Tajuddin blames the UN Security Council for exposing civilians in Darfur to more deadly violence who are defenseless.
We repeatedly warned against the withdrawal of UNAMID since day one because their presence had been helping in protecting the citizens. To make the situation worse, the joint forces that are supposed to be deployed according to the Juba Peace Agreement have not been deployed.
Tajuddin is urging the international community to investigate the killings in West Darfur and to find a way to end what he calls systematic attacks on innocent civilians.
We appeal to the international community to carry out genuine investigations of these crimes. We don't trust the local Sudanese judicial system. They have never succeeded in trying any individual connected with the crimes carried out in Darfur. Similar crimes have been committed in Krending 1, Krending 2, and at the Abu Zar massacre. No one has been charged in a court of law.
The fighting in West Darfur, which comes while the country copes with the fallout from a military coup 6 months ago, led by Army Chief General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, has seen a market burned to the ground and a police station destroyed and a hospital attacked, according to the United Nations and local medical staff. Sudan's acting information minister, Jerham Abdulgazir, says authorities plan to airlift critically wounded people to Khartoum. Dr. Muhammad Saleh, director of the nursing department at Al Janina Teaching Hospital, told this program yesterday that the hospital has remained closed for 5 straight days because health workers are afraid to return to work. Several renewed tribal clashes erupted between different groups across the Darfur region shortly after the withdrawal of the UNAMID peacekeeping operation last year. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
The military spokesperson for the SPLA in opposition says lack of resources and political will is to blame for the delay in graduating South Sudan's unified forces. A South Sudan People's Defense Force official says the various groups that signed the 2018 peace deal will soon discuss a graduation date for the unified forces. Dengai Deng reports for VOA from Bor.
SPLA in opposition spokesperson Lam Paul Gabriel says the delay in graduating the Unified Armed Forces is discouraging. Colonel Gabriel says the forces have spent more than a year at cantonment sites, have suffered long enough, and he blames the SPLM in government for that delay.
This man Ali, when they say that within 1 to 2 weeks, there would be completion of the unified command, then after that we'll go for graduation. As we all know, there has been so much challenges in this implementation, beginning with the lack of resources.
The South Sudan People's Defense Force spokesperson, Major General Lul Roy Kong, says military leaders in the command structure and officials monitoring the implementation of security arrangements will soon meet to set a date for the graduation of the unified forces.
The leadership is still working on the issue of graduation of the necessary unified forces. I got consulted with the deputy CDF over that issue, and he told me that after the unification of command, they will meet as JDB to work out the schedules. So they will have to convene a meeting of mechanisms to come and get the latest update from JTSC. Then the command would agree on when the forces would be graduated or deployed.
Kong says the SPLA-IO is responsible for some of the challenges causing the delays in implementing the security arrangements. Kong says the decision by SPLM-IO leaders to withdraw from the mechanisms implementing security arrangements caused delays in preparing the graduation of unified forces. Chapter 2 of the revitalized peace agreement requires the cantoning, screening, and training of 83,000 necessary unified forces to safeguard the peace deal. The peace deal states that unifying the forces would provide security guarantees for the transitional government of national unity. Soldiers at the training centers across the country have been calling on the government to send them home so they can take care of their families as they wait for a graduation date. Many of the trainees have been stationed at the centers since 2019 and say they lack food and clean water. Thousands of soldiers stationed at various cantonment sites across the country have said the political leaders in Juba have forsaken them. Government leaders blame factors like insufficient funding and lack of political will among the peace parties for the delay in graduating forces. Dozens of trainees have died of starvation and sickness in cantonment and training sites while waiting to graduate, according to SPLA-IO officials. The peace parties recently announced a unified command structure to pave the way for the graduation of forces, but have yet to agree on a graduation date. With just a year to go before the end of the transitional period, the peace parties continue to thread accusations over the slow implementation of the peace agreement, while key provisions are left hanging, including the graduation of unified armed forces. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. The World Health Organization warns that vaccine-preventable diseases are spreading across the African continent because routine immunization against killer diseases have been disrupted by the COVID-19 pandemic. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Tens of millions of people have missed out on routine immunization services. That not only puts their lives at risk from potentially deadly diseases, but creates an environment in which killer diseases can thrive and spread. Benito Impuma is director for communicable and non-communicable diseases in the World Health Organization's Regional Office for Africa. He says the pandemic has put a huge strain on health systems. It has impaired routine immunization services in many African countries and forced the suspension of vaccination drives. Over the past year, he says outbreaks of vaccine-preventable diseases have increased across the continent.
For instance, between January and March of this year, around 70,000 cases of measles were recorded. This sees a 400% increase compared with the same period last year. 24 countries in our region confirmed outbreaks of variant of polio, last year, which is four times more than in 2020.
He notes that outbreaks of other vaccine-preventable diseases, such as yellow fever, also are surging. The World Health Organization and UNICEF recently issued a report warning of a heightened risk of vaccine-preventable diseases. They attribute it in large part to increasing inequalities in access to vaccines due to pandemic-related disruptions. They express particular concern about a worldwide spike in measles cases, which have increased by 79% in the first 2 months of this year. They noted that most cases were reported in Africa and in Eastern Mediterranean regions. Mpuma says WHO is working to improve immunization coverage and protection for children. He says WHO and its partners are supporting African countries to carry out catch-up routine vaccination campaigns.
More than 30 African countries implemented at least one routine catch-up immunization campaigns in the second half of last year. And this year, countries are showing progress with measles and yellow fever campaigns starting again. Central African Republic, Chad, Equatorial Guinea, Ethiopia, Nigeria, Somalia, and South Sudan have reinstated measles campaigns, which is a good news.
Unfortunately, the situation regarding COVID-19 is not as good. WHO says that this week, new COVID-19 cases and deaths on the continent have increased for the first time after a decline of more than 2 months for cases and 1 month for deaths. The latest recorded figures put the number of cases at 11.6 million, including nearly 253,000 deaths. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Internet search giant Google announced this month it's opening its first product development center in Africa to be based in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. The California-based firm plans to invest $1 billion in the next 5 years to target the continent's fast-growing online market. Mohammed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
California-based Google wants to get a bigger share of Africa's growing online population, which is expected to top 800 million by 2030. The company is setting up a product development center in Nairobi that is scheduled to open next year and will employ more than 100 people. Charles Muruta is the head of government affairs and public policy for sub-Saharan Africa at Google. He says the investment will create many opportunities within Africa's tech sector.
The product development center is going to be one that works to create transformative products and services for people right here on the continent, as well as creating products for the rest of the world. And so the announcement last week was really just a kickoff in terms of the hiring process for the people that are going to be working in this product development center for Africa. And that will include roles such as product managers, UX designers and researchers, as well as engineers. And this are really just the starting point of the work that we're going to be doing.
He says the investment will create many opportunities within Africa's tech sector. The multinational technology company said its mission is to make the world's information universally accessible and create a product that works well for Africans. Bitange Ndemo is a former principal secretary of Kenya's Information, Communication and Technology Ministry. He says the government needs to train more of its youth to benefit from the Google Center.
I think it's a wonderful investment in the sense that it's going to help to reduce the problem of unemployment in this country. But what tells the Kenyan government is that they must begin to invest in skilling and reskilling young people so that they can meet the demand. Already, the demand for such skills exceeds supply locally.
Google has trained over 80,000 certified developers from Africa in the past few years. The firm is investing $1 billion in projects over the next 5 years to help with the development of Africa internet economy. Murito says the investment will transform Africa.
It's the opportunity around creating products that work best for Africans at large. And therefore, whether you're thinking about products on financial inclusion or other sectors of economy, we believe that by having a product development center right here on the continent, we'll be able to know firsthand what the challenges are and also be able to create products that will service and solve for some of those challenges.
Microsoft has also invested in Kenya, hiring hundreds of engineers from the East African nation. The continent comes with its own challenges for businesses because some countries lack good governance and the rule of law, and that creates an uncertain environment for investments. Some nations have turned off the internet to silence their citizens. Murito says his organization works with African governments to encourage innovation and develop policies that will sustain innovation. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
We love to hear your remarks on issues in this program. My colleague Nabil Biagio is ready with this week's listener comments. Over to you, Nabil.
Thank you, John. We heard from a number of you this week about our coverage on the deadly intercommunal fighting in South Sudan's Lur County, as well as Sudan's West Darfur state, such as Saber Isaac Hamis in Yambio of Western Equatoria State, who writes, "Hi, VOA South Sudan in Focus. What is taking place in Lur County is totally unacceptable. The current government must make sure that the perpetrators of violence are arrested. South Sudanese have died for long enough. There is no need again to finish the remaining vulnerable ones who have survived this senseless war. May the souls of those died rest in eternal peace, and may justice and accountability prevail for the needy." Jacob Dior Machweng from Rumbek in Lake State says, "Hello, VOA. The continuous conflict in Darfur breaks my heart. The world has heard enough about the suffering of the people of Darfur for almost two decades. It's time for the new government in Khartoum to bring everlasting peace in Darfur. May the lives of the people who perished this week rest in peace." Mabor Alat Rengo in Rumbek in Lake State says, "Hello, VOA. As South Sudan is one of the world's multi-religious countries, I would like to wish our Muslim brothers a happy Eid al-Fitr. May their long fasting bring peace to our country, South Sudan, because we are yearning for it." Tong Chuni Yok Kwai from Juba says, "It's sad news to hear that there is fighting in some parts of South Sudan after the unification of a high command structure in the army, police, wildlife, prison, civil defense, and national security units. I am calling on the presidency to direct the new unified command to stop the ongoing fighting in some parts of the country." Mading Malwal Alwong from Malakal Town writes, "Our soldiers in South Sudan receive 1,500 SSP per month, and a single member of parliament receives the amount of 800,000 SSP per month. The amount of money equivalent to 533 soldiers in SSPDF is now being for a single member of parliament. Our parliamentarians betrayed our giant and brave troops who liberated the country." And our listener Ajak Mahmoud from Khartoum, Sudan says, "Hello VOA, I enjoy listening to you. Greetings to Nabil Biagio and the whole team. Keep up the good work. Thanks." Thank you, Ajak. Mal Adao Mal from the Bor State Hospital in Bor Town of Jonglei State says, "Hello John and Nabil, the news of malaria vaccine is a huge and incredible milestone in the scientific community towards saving millions of lives, especially in Africa, as malaria cases account for over 30% of all hospital admissions, particularly in South Sudan. Many thanks to the WHO for that development." Samuel Romo from Yei says, "Hi John Tanza and Nabil Biagio. We, the people of Africa who are living in Sub-Sahara, are excited by World Health experts for producing malaria vaccines, which could reduce the death rate of Africans in African countries to zero by 2023. Arob Mawien Malek from Juba writes, "Dear VOA, allow me to express my take on the sentencing of four individuals who attempted to kill the bishop in Rumbek. It is good that the law has taken its course, but those sentences of 7, 5, and 4 years imprisonment are not enough for the barbaric act that was masterminded by a Catholic priest in Lake State. This attempt to murder a religious leader tarnishes the image of South Sudanese worldwide. There should have been capital or severe punishment to deter further morbid attempts by other vicious elements. Thank God the bishop who serves us is alive." Robert Nyombe in the Bidibidi camp says, "Hello VOA, thanks for the show. Sometimes I listen to repeated news from the local radio station that airs the news of VOA. Like this Monday, I was listening to the news stories of last week's Friday. I urge VOA as a whole to come up with her own local radio stations in Uganda to air the news. I wouldn't like to miss out on your show." Ustaz Loboy Kalaman Joseph from Torit in Eastern Equatoria State writes, "Dear John Tanza and Nabil Biagio, I am very grateful that the government of Japan has responded positively by donating a huge amount of money to the government of Uganda to cater to the refugees following the request made by the Minister of Disaster Preparedness last week. It's high time not to let down the beneficiaries. Other well-wishers can also do the same. The views presented here do not reflect the views of VOA or of this program. We appreciate hearing from you. Keep those comments coming."
Keep your comments brief and we will sample some of them every Friday. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken has called for the immediate release of Russian civil society activist Vladimir Karamurza, a longtime democracy and human rights advocate and critic of Vladimir Putin's unjustified war against Ukraine. Karamurza was detained by authorities in Moscow on April 11th and sentenced to 15 days in jail. State Department spokesperson Ned Price noted that Karamurza is someone who has previously endured arrests and even near-fatal poisonings in connection with nothing more than his peaceful activities on behalf of the human rights and civil liberties of the Russian people. During a visit to the United States in March, Karamurza called the war against Ukraine an unprovoked, unjustified, unlawful war that is deliberately targeting civilians. He emphasized that Russia and the Putin regime are not one and the same. "There are many people in my country who are opposed to these crimes just as categorically as they are opposed by people here in America." Just hours before he was arrested in Moscow, Karamurza gave an interview to CNN in which he called the Putin regime murderous and predicted that the war in Ukraine would lead to Putin's downfall. By expressing his views, Karamurza ran afoul of new Russian laws which criminalize the spread of what the regime regards as fake information, including calling Russian military operations in Ukraine a war or an invasion. For the past decade, Russian authorities have used a web of vague laws and flimsy pretexts to intimidate and harass independent and dissenting voices, said Hugh Williamson of Human Rights Watch. "Now they are bluntly imposing censorship combined with a false narrative that they demand everyone must parrot." State Department spokesperson Ned Price said the Putin regime is becoming more repressive beyond its borders and more repressive within its borders. He pointed to the detention last year of thousands of individuals who peacefully took to the streets in protest over the arrest and detention of Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny. He also noted that in addition to the recent arrest of Vladimir Karamurza, this year more than 15,000 other Russian citizens have been detained for protesting their government's brutal war against Ukraine. "These are the actions of a government that is fundamentally insecure," spokesperson Price declared, "that is not willing to allow its own people to do what is the right of people everywhere, to voice their protest, to march peacefully, to form associations, and to make their voices and their free will heard."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
That's all we prepared for you this Friday. We now end this show with Gunda and the song Tokaba.
Baba Ungolo, Kaizenove, Neruguda, Tasoba, Rugude, Bindo Muso, Bukubu, Zoiso.
Sikana komedi disekba.
We have been listening to Gunda with the song Sokaba. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for taking time to be with us this evening. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. I'm Ivica.